I think many times when we're thinking about creativity, we're thinking about kind of like the cutesy things that you do to get someone's attention, like, you know, like sending somebody a shoe and saying, I'm trying to get a foot in the door or something like that. So I thought it might be really valuable if we talk about how you can use creativity beyond the cute stuff. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 15,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so before we begin, I have a little bit of splaining to do. I mean, here it is. It is Labor Day weekend here in the U.S. I believe it's also Labor Day weekend in Canada. And I'm rather excited because today we have my in-laws coming over. And every year on Labor Day, we have this tradition that we've been doing in the Castain household for, I'm guessing now, probably the last 15 years. And what I always do is I pick up a filet mignon, which, no exaggeration, the one that I always pick out every year is as big as a small child. I shit you not. It is huge. And what I do is I cook it whole. Because for years, you know, like, I've been obsessed with cooking. This is why, like I'm so fat, right? That, and, you know, I eat a lot, right? But anyway, I enjoy cooking and stuff. And but what I like to do, just like I do in sales, when you see someone who's getting a better result than you, you ask them, hey, how did you do that? Could you break it down for me, right? And kind of deconstruct the process. And over time, I've met all kinds of really good cooks and things like that. And I met somebody who had a catering business, and I asked for their advice on, you know, how can I really make this good? And she had suggested to me to cook it whole. So what I do is imagine just this huge chunk, like picture like a roast beef, but like that was on steroids and it's huge. I'm telling you, this thing is like 3 feet long that I'm going to cook up. I cook it whole. And this way, you know what I mean? You don't like lose any of those like really cool juices in there. And then what I do at the end is take it off the grill and let it sit for a little while and rest. And I take all those juices from when you cut it up, throw them in the pan, saute it up with some mushrooms, some Dijon, some beef broth. I make a really nice broth with it. But why am I telling you all this, especially if you've listened to my podcast and you know I hate this whole business of dicking around on a podcast? It's like, would you just get down to business? It's like enough foreplay already. But I'm telling you this because here it is. It's Labor Day weekend. I'm recording a podcast. So I'm going to try to expedite something, and we're going to see if it doesn't backfire on me. But usually what I do when I'm writing my podcast, I'm not big on being scripted. I like to, like, I always talk about this kitchen table test thing. If I wouldn't say it to you, the words and the delivery, like I would sitting with you having a cup of coffee or a beer at the kitchen table, I don't want to do it. So what I typically do to honor that is I just jot down my thoughts as I'm thinking about, okay, what do I want to talk about in the podcast? Sounds like this rambling idiot talking about how he cooks a filet mignon. And then what I do is I rewrite those so that I can read what the hell I wrote. Today, I decided not to rewrite it because I want to get like to that damn filet mignon. Plus, no joke, I bought like some really kick-ass Padron cigars just to kind of like feel like a pimp in my backyard. So that's kind of my story. So today, if like I'm bumbling a little bit more than usual or whatever, because I'm not going to edit it out. I just don't do that shit. So I guess I'm kind of apologizing, but in another way, you know that I'm just going to be me. So there you go. I'm kind of prefacing. But today we're talking about, now that I broke my no dicking around rule, today we're going to talk about creativity. And a really interesting thing about creativity and so many other things that we do in sales to approach potential clients and close the deal is that sometimes we think of these things in extremes, which I'll explain to you in a moment, And in those moments of thinking about them in extremes, we dismiss them because we're really only thinking about it in an extreme sense. So many times when it comes to creativity, we avoid it for a lot of reasons. And these are kind of extreme reasons. One of them is that we're busy. We think creativity is like, well, you got to be like that person who writes that really cool kick-ass commercial that you watch, like when you're hanging out and doing the Super Bowl or something like that. Well, no, you don't have to be that. I mean, otherwise you would be doing that for a living. I think the other end of it, too, is, you know, another extreme, if you will, in our thinking that maybe keeps us away from it. There's a lot of people who think, well, it's kind of corny and hokey. Not all creativity is corny and hokey. And that's where I wanted to go with it today, to give you ideas and ways that you can use creativity that are not corny or hokey, that help you get a point across to someone. Because it would be great if you and I lived in a world where everybody grasped everything the first time we said it, or one way that we say it, right? That they just connected the dots. We could see the proverbial light bulb go off over their head, make a little chiming sound, ding, they got it, right? We don't live in that world. We just don't. We're living in a world where people are really distracted, short attention spans, way too much competition out there, way too many people sounding the same. So what can we do with creativity where we can help people grasp certain things about us and our offerings and our selling proposition without being corny or hokey? So and this is an episode, by the way, that if you're driving in the car, I really hope you can pull over and take notes, because I'm really not holding back here. I have so many things in here. I said to myself, am I being an idiot here and just giving this away, or should I reserve this more for the people who buy the webinars and stuff? But needless to say, it's Labor Day weekend. I've got like that kick-ass filet mignon waiting for me, kick-ass cigars, might even indulge in a little adult beverage stuff, because I've got a shit ton of tequila, by the way. I overbought. I'm sorry. I'm going on. It's a holiday weekend, man. I'm really going on tangents. I overbought on my tequila. I was given a really nice bottle from my kids, who are all adults now, by the way. I don't want you to think like I have a 7-year-old. They gave me a bottle of tequila. That's the stuff that a call to child services is made of. No, my grown-up kids gave me a bottle of tequila. And when I go camping, which I've taken 4 trips this summer, I've discovered how nice it is to make a margarita when you're hanging out on a campsite. I mean, like, I discovered this late in life. And last time, you know, I went to the liquor store and bought one of those, like, little bottles. And, you know, like, I forgot to bring it on the next camping trip, so I bought another bottle. So now I've got all this, like, leftover tequila. Imagine that, leftovers with tequila. But anyway, this is an episode you want to jot down and take notes. So let's get down to business. The very first way that you can use creativity to help you, like to kind of close more deals and stuff, is in the use of evidence. I talk about evidence a lot, if you notice. And let's give you a definition so you know what the hell I'm talking about. My definition of evidence are really things that you can use to help eliminate and or, you know, maybe reduce, at the very least, reduce doubt, skepticism, and you ready for this? Objections. So let me say it again. We use evidence, and there's different forms of evidence, which we'll go over in a minute. We use evidence to reduce and ideally eliminate things like doubt and skepticism, hesitation, and of course, objections. So there are many forms of evidence. And I am going to hold back a little bit on this, because the people come into the webinars, I share over 12 to 15 different types of evidence, and within all those are several examples. But I will still give you several right now. So one of the first things that you can do, and you can use some creativity in doing it, is you want to like use like demonstrations to show like how good your widget can perform and everything, right? That is a way to eliminate that. I can tell you about my solutions all day long, but you know, how about almost like giving you the keys and letting you test drive it right there with me? So there's different ways that we can do a demonstration of our solutions. So one way we can do it is in a live setting as opposed to dead, which is creepy and weird, right? But I mean like a live setting, like I'm right there with you, sitting there in your office, and, you know, like I kind of, you know, cue it up on the computer screen. It's okay, look, I want you to press this button, try this out. You see how easy that is to use? Like we demonstrate that way, right? Or a physical product or whatever. That's one way we can do it. We can also, because we're living in a world now where many of us, I know I am, we're more of like into an inside sales model where we're not like, you know, like old school going to visit potential clients, just like, and especially if you're like me, where you have prospects all over the world, right? It's not practical. Hop on a plane. I'm going to go to France just to kind of talk to some people about maybe doing business with the Castain training systems. So we're on an inside model. So video could be good, obviously WebEx, but even, and this is where you can even get a little more creative, a pre-recorded WebEx. I mean, especially you have someone who, I mean, maybe as a last resort, is just you haven't had a chance to be heard out or whatever it is. Maybe you do a pre-recorded little quick 5 to 10 minute demo on a WebEx. And I call it like a potato chip type of demo, where we're not giving them all the answers, we're not giving them all the bells and whistles and all the really cool things, but we're making them hungry. We're giving them a few potato chips, if you will, to get them hungry for more. So that's one of the things that you can do with a demo, but also very similar to demos and demonstration is demonstrating something. Demonstrating something. So many times in sales, we'll be very quick to say, well, you know, like, you know, you get me, right? You're buying Paul Castain, which is easy for me to say because I truly am the product with Castain training systems. But like, let's just say back in the day when I was selling printing, right? You're getting Paul Castain, right? That's all well and good and everything. But I think what you need to do, because people do buy us before they buy the company and the widget and everything else, we have to demonstrate to them that they're going to be in good hands with us. So you really need to think about the things that you really want to demonstrate to people, like perhaps like your know-how, right? That's an important thing, right? So how can you demonstrate that to them along the way? And there's lots of little things that you could do. Like, for example, you could send along an idea. Now, I want to stop for a minute. You might be thinking, well, what's so creative about this? Well, it's a lot better than just saying, well, you get me. Or it's a lot better than saying, we're the best, or whatever. You got to prove things to people. Because I really hate to be the bearer of bad news here, but people are just like a tad skeptical of like salespeople. And they tend to doubt us a little bit. And, you know, before you get like shitty about that statement that I just made, let me remind you of something that I bet like 99.9% of us do listen to this podcast. I mean, if you think I'm kidding about, you know, people not fully trusting salespeople, think about the last time you went into some kind of a showroom or something, and you might be like really in need for a particular thing. Like you go and there's like big sales on Labor Day here in the US on like an appliance or whatever. And you go in there and you definitely need something, man. That damn refrigerator back home might be like on its last breath, and you've got that damn filet mignon in the fridge like I do, and you don't want that puppy to go bad. So you go in there and the sales rep says, can I help you? And, you know, because like, hey, you don't fully know this dude or dudette yet, and you want to get the lay of the land, what do you say? Well, I'm just looking, right? Because you just want to kind of just take your time, pull back, observe that sales rep in its his or her natural habitat, like, you know, like it's something on like Animal Planet or some shit. But you know, like, I mean, we do it too. So it happens. So we have to find ways of demonstrating things to people. And I think, you know, if you think about giving someone an idea, no strings attached, no you owe me or anything else on the front end without giving away the store, that's a nice way of demonstrating your ability. Also, writing things that could be very helpful to people, educating them in how to buy your widget properly, because I'm here to tell you that people make shitty decisions right? They really do. Not every time, but people make bad decisions. I mean, how many times, I want you to think back on deals that you lost, and it's not just being a sore sport or your inner competitor, where you look and you say, boy, that was a bad decision they made. I mean, I don't think they really understood that, like, we were the better choice. And you're not saying it because, you know, you sell the product, but it was the better choice to go with you. So what you can also do is educate people on how to buy your widget. And one of the oldest formulas, and it's an old copywriting formula, is to create a piece for them, like a PDF or whatever, and get it to them, and educating them on some things that they need to be thinking about in the decision-making process would be, and it's a fill-in-the-blank formula. It's something like what every blank should know about blank. What every blank should know about blank. So I'll go back to that printing example. So here I am, let's just say I'm back to selling printing. My whole damn sales training gig fails me and you guys don't buy any of my shit and now I gotta go back to selling print, right? Not the worst thing in the world, but my ego will be badly damaged. I couldn't do this podcast. It'd be a disaster. But anyway, see, I'm getting all upset now. But anyway, so I could put out a piece, you know, if I were selling print and say, you know, I'm selling to someone ideally in the marketing department. So I could put what every marketer needs to know about blank, or what every marketer should know about selecting a printing partner. Things like that make their job easier. And it's a soft sell, by the way. So that is a creative thing that you can do. One little side note about that. It's also a creative way of helping people eliminate your competitors, because you're not going to come out and say, don't buy from these people. They're clowns and they suck. But what you're doing is you're educating them on the things that they should be looking for and the things that they should basically say, okay, that's out of bounds. I'm not going to go with you. So you can help them do that in a way. And that is a creative approach. The other things that you can do, provide people with examples, right? That's another way that you can help provide evidence. Think about examples that would underscore a point that you're trying to make. Stories are huge, and it's a great opportunity for you to provide creativity. I'm not saying that you go and you invent a story. I'm saying the creativity many times is in the storytelling, right? We're not taking creative license, or as like the saying goes, like getting, we have this saying, because, and I can say it, by the way, because I'm part Irish, kind of, you know, the Irish in you telling the story, right? Like at the bar, and it's just like completely like created in folklore type. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about being creative in your delivery of the story. So let me give you an example of this. And it's an example I've used before, but many, many years ago, when your Uncle Paul here, as Billy Joel once said, wore a younger man's clothes and had a full head of hair, mind you, I was selling franchise cleaning services for a rather large company back then. I think we were about $600 million a year or something like that back in the 90s. And I met with somebody who was really skeptical and really, if we're being honest, quite a dick. I mean, seriously, the guy was a dick. And I get there, and he's just like, I really wanted to hit him, quite frankly. And he just was being an ass and going on and on and on. And my inner competitor just kind of kicked in. I was like, I really just, like, this is the guy I want to sell because he's so damn skeptical. So what I did was I told a very true story because he, by the way, he was one of the owners in a chain of these dental centers out on Long Island. So this wasn't like, you know, like one location or whatever it is where you'd walk away and say, hey, it's one location, who cares, right? I mean, this was like, this would be a major win for my company. And he was telling me how much he thought my profession sucked, right? I mean, that's always like a great appointment. He hated it. He'd been through so many bad experiences. He's like that person in a relationship, like a brand new relationship that has all that baggage and bad relationships and is judging you because of their bad relationships. And it was just a bad losing situation. So I just, you know, like as I'm packing my bag because I figure this is going to be done, I said to him, you know, a few years ago, I had just a really bad experience with a dentist. And right away, it was amazing. Right away, his demeanor changed. And I struck like a chord with him because it gets better. And I said, and I had a root canal, and it was just absolutely a horrific experience for me. There was an infection that set in. That it turned out the dentist didn't do a few things properly with it, left it open and didn't, you know, seal it up, didn't give me any meds to fight the infection, whatever it is. I kept telling him, this doesn't feel right. I am in incredible pain, and I'm a guy that doesn't go around, you know, being a big puss about this stuff, but like I'm sitting here and, you know, I'm just in pain. It got so bad, folks, that I almost like I couldn't talk. It was like into my jaw, and it was hurting and everything else. And I said to him, you know, at that point, he said to me, he goes, well, you went to another dentist, right? And it was great because he kind of helped me close the deal right then and there. He goes, you went to another dentist, right? Didn't you? And I said, yeah, I did. And you could tell he was like feeling my pain. You could tell he's been down this road where he's been the guy who people have gone to after somebody else screwed up. He really, on that side, he really cared about his patients. And he, when he said that to me about going to someone else, I said, well, what if I chose to do what you're doing right now, just kind of write off your entire thing? He goes, oh, no, you couldn't have done that. You would have wound up in the hospital and everything else. And I said, well, you're not going to wind up in the hospital for not cleaning your place. But I'm telling you right now, you're going to have a lot of turned off patients because nobody's going to, you guys aren't going to clean it the way we are. I mean, you know, you're going to have inspections and stuff that I'm telling you right now, the way it looks, what I'm looking at, it's not going to do too well if any kind of, you know, health department people come by or anything else. And, you know, but the bottom line is, Doc, I didn't say it like that. I'm just saying it to you guys. See, telling it like we're at the bar. And no, I said to him, look, I mean, you know, what if I like just completely like wrote off your industry or whatever it is? And he, at that point, he said, I really see your point. And we, you know, we talked a little bit more, and I walked out with the signed contract. So what are some stories maybe that you can tell that can help illustrate a point? Also, too, anytime that you use analogies, and if you want to see some analogies in action, if you go to yoursalesplaybook.com and you just go into the little search engine box that I have there and you type in analogies, I use several analogies in there from Verizon that they're using in their campaigns. And I provide you with several that I've used in my business that'll be very helpful for you to learn. But again, and final thing about analogies, by the way, is that analogies also allow us to dumb something down without calling somebody an idiot, which I think is kind of important, right? So we can do that too. But, you know, there are other things that you can do that might be able to help you out or whatever. In fact, you know what? I just want to talk about that analogies thing. I want to give you kind of a different example than I've ever provided before. A lot of people turn to me and at least consider me to be their sales coach. And the thing of it is, you got to remember about what I do for a living, right? There are just a tremendous amount of competitors that I have. And people are always in their brain when you're in a really competitive industry. They're always trying to figure out, okay, what's the difference? What are the knockout punches? What are the things? What are the red flags? And what are the things that make this person in a crowd raise their hand and say, look at me over here. This is, I'm a better choice for you. So one of the things I talk about, because one of my key differences, and you need to be thinking about your key differences versus your competitors, and it's not for everybody what I'm about to tell you, is that I don't follow your typical coaching model. The typical coaching model is that a coach will ask you all these questions and lead you on this path of self-discovery. I think it's important to ask good questions. I'm a real advocate. I did a webinar on the importance of asking kick-ass questions. I just think that by the time you guys have the balls to reach out to me and say, Castaigne, can you help me? I want to hire you as my coach. You have so many questions of your own that you don't need somebody piling it on. I also think that there are a lot of quote-unquote coaches who take advantage of the coaching model. They have jack shit to teach you, And they just figure, well, I'll just ask you questions and let you do the work. They have nothing to give you. And I think they take advantage of it. So what I do is, yes, I'll ask you questions, but I give you answers. So think about the analogy that I can use there is, I'll say to someone, you know, the big difference is it's like going for an interrogation versus somebody giving you the answers, which is going to be more valuable to you right now. So that's another thing that you can do. But what I want you to think about when it comes to evidence is, I want you to think about when you should be using this. And I want to give you some thoughts. On your approach, it's not a bad idea to offer some evidence. Why? People are skeptical, especially when it comes to protecting their time. I don't know if I want to talk to you and if it's going to be worth the interruption in my day. I don't know if I want to like schedule a meeting or schedule a demo with you. I don't know if it's going to be worth the time or if you're going to be a complete pain in my ass or whatever. So how can you use it then on the approach, but also during your meetings, between the meetings, and also during the marriage? It's very, very important. Once people decide to go with you, we want to continually use evidence. Not like we're defensive, but you know, you have to realize other people are courting your client. So we have to use evidence to kind of cement the relationship, but also there's going to be times where there might be another product or service that might serve them better. We might need to provide some evidence. There might be times where we're trying to expand the relationship and we need to provide evidence to those other departments and all. So I want you to think about it from that point of view. So now let's go to item number two, which I will not beat the hell out of, anywhere near as much. But also, I think you really need to be using creativity to make the intangible things that you offer more intangible. So let me say it again. We want to use creativity to make the intangible things that we offer more tangible. I can tell you that this is right up there at the top of the list of absolutely all caps huge mistakes that sales reps make. Many times they're so busy focusing on the product and focusing on needs, very, very important, focusing on telling the company story and the value proposition and all, that they forget about helping the prospect like see and feel the product and just get a tangible face on the stuff that's intangible. So let's talk about what are some of these things that are intangible. Well, let's just say that I do a lot of work with software companies and IT companies and things like that. So what they're doing in a way, especially like a software and some of the solutions, some of those things are intangible, but what a lot of them will do is they'll offer training on their product, right, during the implementation. So what does training look like? I really want you to think about, what does training look like? It's an intangible thing, so we want to help them put a face on it. So maybe some of the things that you can do to help make it more tangible, if you offer training, you know, product training or whatever, you could, as you're talking about it, show them one of the training manuals. And I worked for a company that we showed them that this is one of three training manuals that are going to support the classroom training that we're going to give you. This is one of seven DVDs that we're also going to give you to reinforce the training after it's done. Heck, you know, here's, you know, I'm not going to give it to you because, you know, my instructors would get kind of mad, but, you know, here's a copy of the test that all of our technicians have to go through at the end, and they must get a 75% or better. Look at this test. This is no joke. I mean, yeah, it's making me nervous just thumbing through this. I can only imagine, you know, what it's like for these people. Even putting a tangible face on the person who does the training and kind of selling their expertise. Hey, everyone, I want you to meet, you know, Paul Castain. He's going to be the guy that's going to come in and train, you know, the team. And you could have a picture of the trainer and, you know, and then take them through that person's experience. See, when you do that, you're making it more tangible. So let me give you some other intangibles that I want you to think about. Also, if you have a really good system of quality control, understand quality control is an intangible thing. How could you put a tangible face on that so that people can look at it and say, man, that looks like a quality control program? Things like technical support, things like being insured. I always tell the story about a company I work for where we were insured at levels that, are, you know, we beat our nearest competitor by 10 or 15 million in insurance. So, but insurance is an intangible thing. So we showed the certificate of insurance and also included it in with our proposals as a form of evidence in there to kind of reduce doubt. And it worked like a charm, by the way. Also, guarantees and warranties. How can you put kind of a physical face on that, make it more tangible? And don't forget, like just like the other stuff that I was telling you about when we talked about evidence before, you want to be thinking in terms of several parts of the sales cycle. The approach, use this type of making intangibles tangible tactics during your meetings, between meetings, and of course, during the marriage. Let's move on. The next thing, this one is rather fun, and I really enjoy this one in particular, is creative use of social. And then in some of you right now, like, you lost me. Creative use of social. It absolutely amazes me how many people are still waiting for some kind of miraculous sign from God as an indication, like, okay, then social is a good thing and I should get involved in it. And like, I remember hearing, I'm not kidding you, I got involved in 2008 when I first started getting involved in like LinkedIn and Twitter. And I remember back then people were like, well, the jury's out and I need to see case studies and evidence. And there's still a tremendous amount of people, even though we have a lot of people who've gotten on board, but there's still a tremendous amount of people that are waiting for something. And I'm thinking, well, geez, I mean, you know, LinkedIn, I think, has been around since what, 2002, 15 years or so now, maybe even longer. Like, what the hell are you waiting for? So it is free to you to be able to use it. And nobody, well, at least I'm not saying to you, it's social versus old school. I'm saying, why the hell wouldn't you use something that's free to you? When the story that I always love to tell, and I need to tell it to you guys, out here on Long Island, there are these lawyers, Salino and Barnes, and they must have won like a massive lawsuit because I see these guys everywhere on Long Island on billboards. And I always laugh when I say their name for a variety of reasons. And, you know, I won't get into all of them, but there's like a few bridges where they have their image and some smart ass has gone and like on the graphic, like blacked out like one of the dude's teeth. And it just looks hysterical. But anyway, I digress. See, I've never grown up. It's like my inner sixth grader is going, oh, she said prick when she was, I mean, you know, like that kind of stuff. That's my sense of humor. That's like my warped, feeble sixth grade brain that I have. But anyway, I also can train people. So that's why, like, I haven't, like, you know, wound up in jail or anything, I guess. I don't know. Or gotten fired because I own my own business. But they're all over the place, man. They're on radio and they're on local TV channels and stuff. They're in the newspaper and everything. It costs a shit ton of money to be that kind of visible. And I guarantee you, if you do it right, you can get more visibility on social. And it'll never cost you a dime. I mean, hey, if you have the deep pockets and you can do that other stuff, God bless, go do it. But, you know, I don't. I love free. I think free is an awesome thing. So here are some examples of how your peers are using some of these things on social, and they're going at it in a more creative way. So the first example that I have for you is by a gentleman by the name of Rusty Russell. And I'm not making up any of these names, by the way. Rusty Russell. I've known Rusty now since probably about 10 years. We worked for the same company back in the days when I worked for Consolidated Graphics. And Rusty, what he does, he's in car sales. And one of the things that I love that he does, and it's just such a simple thing to do, doesn't cost you any money to do it. What he does is every time he makes a car sale, he has his picture taken with the person or the couple who just bought the car. And, you know, he's capturing something that I think is very important. And in a way, it's intangible. It's that pride of ownership. Think about that pride of ownership. Think about how you felt and how proud you've been every time you buy a car. For me, I've been buying like cars Not every year, man. I would be like even more broke than I am. But I've been buying cars since 1983, and it's never gotten old with me. I always feel a sense of pride and accomplishment. And, you know, certainly when you buy a home and things like that. But he captures that moment. But also, too, when he does it, I think he does something else psychologically that's very, very important. I think it shows that he cares. And especially when you see in the picture, he legitimately cares. And he's like celebrating with them and happy. And I just think that's, you know, it costs him nothing, but he conveys a sentiment. And that's pretty important. There's this lady by the name of, and I hope I don't mispronounce her name, she's in my network, Sharon Gannon. Sharon Gannon. And every week, seems like every week, I see different pictures that she posts of coffee demos. She works for one of those coffee service companies where they have all kinds of really cool coffees, and they even have like cold brew machines that you can you know, rent and everything else. And she comes in, and big part of their selling process, from what I could see, is their demo. You remember I talked about that to before, where we talked about that being a form of evidence? Well, once she sets everything up nice and pretty for everyone and has all like the cups and the different types of, you know, like Keurig little, whatever the hell you call those things, you know, things you put in the Keurig thing, little capsules or whatever they are, modules or whatever the F. I almost full out said the F word, and we are not ready for that frontier yet. We've only recently gotten over the whole S thing, the shit curse. So I don't think we're ready, nor I don't think we'll ever be ready for the F curse. I just don't plan on doing that. But no, she will have it all laid out. And I don't know about you guys, man. I love coffee and salespeople and coffee. Man, it's like I could be sipping a coffee, like one so big that has like the chin straps like you would feed a horse, and I see that and I'm like, I'm thirsty for it, man. I'm like, man, that looks pretty damn good. So that's what she does. Doesn't cost her anything. She takes a picture of it. There is this guy, and I could not find his name for the life of me. And what I do is, I don't know if you guys do this, whenever I come across something that either I want to mention in a blog or a podcast, or just as somebody I used to work with would say, for your own edification, right? I had to look up that word, for your own edification. What I do is I'll like screenshot something. And in this case, I screenshotted the picture, but I didn't get his damn name, so I can't give any props here. But there's this guy that is in my network, and he works with one of those solar companies. And every time they do an install, he'll take a selfie, and in the background, you'll see the guys installing the solar panels on the roof. Again, it shows the product being installed. It shows he's got a big smile on his face. And also, too, folks, people need to continually bump into you and your message in a variety of places, because if they don't, they forget about you. And if you think that we live in a world that you could just show up once and people get it and they buy from you, it really doesn't happen that way. That's an exception more than the rule. And, you know, I don't think this is the most creative thing, but I've done that too. Not as much, but what I've done is I write a lot of training manuals for the companies that I'm going to go and do the training. So again, you know, I want you to see a physical product. What I'll do from time to time is take a picture of the training manual that I'm writing. I'll block out the name of the company because I really can't kiss and tell with the line of work that I do. A lot of companies don't want it known that they hired, you know, a guy to come in and, you know, reinvent their sales force and all that kind of stuff. So I'll block out the name of the company or whatever. You know, I thought about at times doing a picture of everyone in the classroom and everything like that, but there are some legal things in there that can make it sticky. You really, if you're going to be using something like that publicly, you have to have everybody sign a release. And what I found is, because I tried to do it a while ago, you know, salespeople especially were just so damn all over the place with our ADD and everything. They're thinking about other things, and they're not thinking about signing the damn release form. I can't show a picture of everybody in it if everybody didn't sign the release form. So now I have to become more obsessed with getting everybody to sign a release form than the training experience. And me, I need to focus on the training experience. But that's an example for you to think about, like kind of you know, of creative uses of things. But there's more to it. It's not just in selling things. I've seen the leadership at certain companies do some really interesting things. Like, for example, and I hope I don't mispronounce his name, Carmine Napolitano from Cintas. I'm connected with him on LinkedIn. And one of the things I notice that he does every week, and I really respect it and I like it, and I'm sure others feel the same way, what Carmine Napolitano from Cintas does is he takes a picture each and every week of him with his top performer of the week. And even sometimes if somebody makes like a big accomplishment, he celebrates that win publicly. Now you might be thinking, you know, how is that a good thing? Well, first of all, what he's selling right there is his leadership, because he recruits also. You know, part of, you know, managing a sales team is that you got to be on the lookout for more sales talent at all times, even when you think everything is great, because everything can change tomorrow. So we're, you know, it's just like always be closing. They're always recruiting. So ABR, right? Always be recruiting, right? Which doesn't really even sound good, but whatever. So when we see things like that, where he, again, he's got this big smile on his face, he's right there with them, sometimes, you know, hand on the shoulder, presenting them with something, he's sharing that success. And when you think about it from a salesperson's perspective, have you always felt respected by the person you report to? Have you always felt that your contributions were recognized? And I think it's a brilliant thing that he's doing. But also, too, it underscores culture. And I think that's important, both in the fact that they celebrate wins, but also that it's a performance company, and that, you know, if you're there to perform as well. So I think that's pretty important. Also, the people at Paychex, one of the thing that I notice, things that I've noticed that they've been doing for the past few weeks now, I think, maybe 3 weeks to a month, is that they've been posting pictures of the 2018 destination for their President's Club trip. And that is a recruiting measure. So you've seen this, oh man, you guys are going to this really cool place in Florida, and wow, you're recognizing performers, man, and you know, like, wow, I'd love to work for a company like that. So I think that's pretty cool. Also too, I notice, again, going back to Cintas, because they just did this, I think about a week ago. Yeah, it was about a week ago that they did this. They had their President's Club, you know, late August. And I'm connected with a lot of people at Cintas. And I noticed that they had a lot of them that made it to President's Club had posted pictures of them hanging out. And a lot of them were really solidifying this concept that they're a family there. And I really like things like that. I think, again, it conveys something to you. If you're considering making a transition and going to another company, even from a potential customer's perspective, I think we all value companies that value their employees. I love seeing things like that. But also, speaking of valuing employees, one brilliant thing that I've seen lots of companies do over the summer especially is showing things with company events. Like, you know, we got everybody today and we got everybody together and gave them a half a day off so that we could tailgate and thank everybody for their performance. Or, you know, here are some pictures of the sales department flipping burgers and you know, showing their appreciation for, you know, the entire manufacturing team or the entire team here, whatever. Things like that are very, very important. Or even just things where you'll see teams out celebrating a good month. It shows culture. It shows that they have fun, that it's not always business. I do want to point out one negative thing, though, that I think we have to be careful of, or maybe two. And I promise you I'm going to get on and off the subject, because I could easily get very intense about this because I'm passionate about what I'm about to tell you, that I think it can be a mistake if you're not careful with it. Because what a lot of companies are doing, especially a lot of these younger startups, is that they're going a little bit too heavy duty on the fun and casual atmosphere of their company. Now, I don't want to sound like the angry old guy yelling at the kids to get off my lawn playing ball or anything like that. I have since adopted more of a casual mindset, and I know that the world has become that way. But I think what they're also doing, some of these companies, that they're too busy trying to show you how much like they're a fun environment, that you can't help but wonder, well, do you do any work? right? I mean, I think it's great that, you know, you're having Beer Friday or some shit, but, like, do you get any work done? And, by the way, is my work going to be handled by somebody shit-faced? Or, you know, like, are you doing my work when you're having Beer Friday? Or, like, what? You know, I think what people need to remember, and if you're not driving, I want you to jot this down. Whatever we say and do repeatedly and consistently becomes associated to us and how people, it's like word association. If you see me doing and acting and saying like certain things over time, somebody say Paul Castain, and then you're going to say the same thing. You know, you're going to say the thing that pops into your head. And if the only image that you have of me and my company is that, you know, we're always hanging out and having Beer Fridays, and it's more of a frat house, I just don't know that you're going to be taken at the level of seriousness. And I know what they're doing and why they're doing it. They're trying to attract people in that want that or whatever. I'm going to sound like a real dick here. I don't want to attract in people like that. I like to attract in people who, yes, definitely like to have fun and that not going to all be stuffy and everything else. But make no mistake, if you come to work for me, you're going to get your uniform dirty. We're not going to be sitting here obsessed with fun shit to do. We will have fun doing what we're doing. But, you know, I want people that want to conquer the world with me. And we will have fun in that process. But if you want fun first, you go back to college and join a frat. Be like, you know, Rob, you remember those Rob Lowe commercials for DirecTV or whatever it was? It was like peaked in college, Rob Lowe. Go back and be peaked in college, Rob Lowe, if you want that shit. But that's one thing. The other thing you have to be careful about when you're posting pictures is that there might be some side effects to it that are not good for you. And one of them, and I've seen it backlash on people, and I don't particularly agree with the comments that people are making. I think it's kind of dicky at times, but I get it. Like, sometimes people will post a picture and, you know, somebody will say, well, I really don't see any diversity on that team or whatever. Or, you know, a woman, which, you know, I get and I understand, will say, I don't, you know, like, where are the women? You know, whatever. I see, you know, one woman and, you know, 13 guys or whatever. So I get all that. But that could be like, I doubt that was the thing that they intended. But I could tell you another part of it, too, that I think companies are going to really have to get their shit together on. And I'm not saying this because I'm the old fart now. I'm saying it because it's true. Is that I'm seeing all these pictures and I wonder, like, what are they doing with the older people? Are they hiding them away? Are they keeping them in the, are they chaining them in the dungeon or some shit? But, you know, like I'm looking at this picture and I'm seeing a shit ton of 26-year-olds in it. And, you know, a shit ton of maybe, you know, like people that are tops like 32. So that to me tells me that, you know, you're discriminating. The same way that when a woman sees a picture that there's really no women in it, and maybe someone of color sees that there's not somebody of color, but, you know, I'm just wondering, where the hell are the old people? You know, are the older people? It's like, we like, once you're over 32, you can't sell anymore? I mean, like, what the hell? So you got to be careful of that. I told you, I didn't want to go on too much of a rant about that, but you got to be careful of the side effects. But next, I think what I want to leave you on, like the note where I want to leave off, is, you remember I said before, whatever you do repeatedly, consistently over time becomes linked to you. It's, you know, repetition, therefore, is kind of the mother of brand and how people perceive you. I want to leave you with how people judge us. And there's typically 7 different ways. And the reason why I want to leave you with that is because if you can, like, make like a homework assignment for yourself, where you look at each of these things that I'm about to tell you as far as the judgments, the 7 judgments, if you will, and kind of ask yourself a question as I go through them. In what ways can I bring creativity to that judgment or in how I present myself, right? So the very first way that we're judged is how we look. How we look. And I don't mean if you're good looking or not, right? Although I bet, you know, there's people out there that just judge that way, right? I'm sure, you know, they exist. But I mean, like, kind of the packaging, not just in dressing for success, so to speak, but let's go back to social for a minute. Let's take, like, your LinkedIn profile and think about that picture right there. Does that represent the best you. And by the way, I just updated my photo, and I'm really at an age now where I should be updating it, like, you know, every year or whatever, because, like, the last thing I'd wanted to, like, and I'm sorry, this is a true story. It is, like, the funniest freaking thing for me, because, again, I've got that sixth grade brain and humor, right? But there is this lady out by me who, no shit, has had this same picture in the local paper where she advertises since the 80s, man. She's got the big hair. It's all feathered and shit. And it's like, you know, like, I ran into her at a networking event. And, you know, when she said who she was, I was like, I know the name. I'm just not putting the face in the name. She goes, yeah, I got my ads in there. And I almost wanted to say whatever it is. Oh, yeah, is that your granddaughter? I mean, like, she looks so different. But, like, you know, like, updating your picture and all. But so what I did was I went, and a few weeks ago, and I actually talked about it on this podcast, I went for a photo shoot because we're redoing the website, and very quick update. I had said it was going to be done just after Labor Day. It's probably going to be later this month because we've added a lot of things to it. So, you know, stay tuned on that. But anyway, so I go for this photo shoot. And we did all these other, like, poses and stuff like that. And then we do the headshot that's going to be for LinkedIn. And sometimes you got to listen to yourself, folks, and, like, the inner voice that's telling you something. Or, like, you ever just, like, feel a sense of discomfort, but you can't put your finger on it? Something isn't right. I mean, there's a disturbance in the force. When they were taking the pictures for my headshot for LinkedIn and what was going to be in my bio, like, I mean, like, I felt like those pictures were going to be the shittiest pictures. And they were, by the way. And, you know, because I'm posing and I'm all formal and I've got the tie on and the suit and all this other shit. And it just, I was just really, like, you know, the fat guy in a little coat, man. It just wasn't working. So I we took those pictures. It was one of, like, five poses that that I was doing. But I decided, ultimately, to use the picture that's going to be the new podcast photo, which you guys will be seeing within the next month. But what I did was I took the podcast photo, and there I am. I've lost the suit jacket. My tie is loosened. I've got my sunglasses on. I'm, like, hovering over a microphone, and I'm being me. And, you know, that fits me a lot better, and it underscores my brand than this stuffy shit that just doesn't fit me at all. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't think I'd do my podcast in a stuffy shit type of way. But, and if you guys want to see the picture, if you go to LinkedIn and look up my profile, Paul Castain, you will, you'll see it. Or if you go to the website, yoursalesplaybook.com, you'll see an icon at the very top of the page that, like, the LinkedIn logo. If you click on that, you can connect with me there, and you can, and you could also see the picture that I did. But if people are judging us on how we look, think about that. Your picture and your image, how you act is another form of judgment. What we say, how we say it. And let's stop there for a minute. The LinkedIn bio, I rewrote that too. So I really do want you to go by my profile and have a look, because you'll see the picture that I went with. And if you've been listening to me for a while, I want you to ask yourself a question. You know, does this underscore the Paul Castain that I'm visualizing? And you'll kind of get the message. But then I want you to read my summary that's on there. I just redid it like 2 days ago. And instead of, again, the stuffy thing or whatever, I tell you guys the story about how I got into sales. I kind of, like, share some personal things in there. I inject my irreverent humor in there. I also make myself a bit vulnerable and share how, you know, I lost some things along the way and how I had to regain it and kind of rise from the ashes. But I do it in a non-corny way, but in a way that I'm using a little creativity to stand out from all the corporate stuffy types, that many of which I compete against. And I just want to show everybody, if you want that, go hire them. But if you want something different, which most people, by the way, by the time they get to me, they're like, you know, we want somebody who's different. We want to hire a speaker who's actually going to come in there and kick the shit out of the people that are in there without being a drill sergeant. That he's going to come in there, rock their world. Pens are going to be going. People are going to say, this guy's actually in the trenches. He's not some guy that like quits, you know, selling during like the Clinton administration or like God forbid, like Reagan or some shit, like, you know, all the way back when. But so that's another way that we're judged, right? How we say things, where you say things, with whom you say it, and what others are saying about you. And we're going to talk about that one too. What others are saying about you. Well, that to me is another way of saying, and one of and many things, but testimonials. So there are different ways that you can put testimonials out there for your audience. One of the things that I recommend to all my coaching clients, my consulting clients, training clients, is that you recognize something. The person reading, the average person reading a testimonial thinks that the person doing it is full of shit. Seriously. And the people that put the testimonials on their site make it very easy for people to think they're full of shit because they'll write all these wonderful things about it. And then instead of putting a name there, they'll put sales rep in the pharmaceutical industry. Hey, thanks, man. You just narrowed that down to 12 million effing people, right? Or like you'll see something else. Tony R. from Comac, Long Island. Great. You know, I'm thinking what? Probably have 100,000 Tony R's in Comac. Like, what does that do? So one of the things that I like to do when it comes to testimonials is have a testimonial sheet of paper that, you know, testimonial sheet that you include in your proposals, maybe in a pre-appointment kit or something like that, and title it what real people are saying about and what they should, like that, what they're saying about, it should be your name and the company. So what real people are saying about Paul Castain and Castain Training Systems, what real people are saying about Jane Jones and the Acme Corporation. And when you share those testimonials, what you should do is have ones that talk about you and the widget, you and the company. Because if people are buying you, that there needs to be some evidence that you are the shit. And that's one of the things you can do with your testimonials. So, I mean, there you have it, folks. I mean, I kind of feel like we covered a lot, ranging from the filet mignon that I want to cook up that's as big as a small child, to several forms of evidence and how that could be a form of creatively getting people off the fence, by the way, and reducing doubt and skepticism and objections. We also talked about how to use creativity to make the intangible things you offer more tangible. We talked about creativity in social that companies are doing with the pictures that they're taking, but also not just from a sales perspective, but from a recruitment perspective. We're seeing that, but we're also, we left off too on how people judge us, and there's seven different judgments. And there you have it, folks. I mean, lots of things for you to ponder, all completely worthless unless you choose to do something about it. But before you go, I'd like for you to do something. If you haven't done so already, I'd like you to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/standout. All one word, by the way, on the standout part, all lowercase. yoursalesplaybook.com/standout. We have a webinar that's going to be coming up this Thursday, and I believe I gave you guys the wrong date last week when I gave it, but it's going to be coming up this Thursday, September 7th at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. And if right away you heard that and go, oh, shit, Castain, I mean, bad week, we're just getting back from the whole Labor Day thing, getting back from vacation and all this, and I'm busy, I got a thing, I got to go get my back waxed that day, whatever your excuse is, I still want you to sign up, not to support the Uncle Paul Foundation here, but because I also record my webinars, and I'll be happy to send you the replay afterwards. So don't ever let the fact that you're busy become your crutch and your excuse. That's a bullshit excuse. That's like, you know, like the dog ate my homework. I'm too busy, right? So what we're going to be doing during this webinar is we're going to talk about how you can use creativity to open more doors and close more deals. And I really want you to think about something for a minute. I mean, seriously, when you hear that, open more doors and close more deals. I mean, do you really think that, oh, great, Castain, like, you know, the last thing I need is more doors open, more deals, and more effing money in my pocket? So if you are of the mere mortal men and women category, like I fancy myself as being a part of, and you want to get better at getting in the door and getting more deals across the finish line, especially now when we start really with the final quarter of 2017, I want you to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/standout. And with that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Visit us at www.yoursalesplaybook.com.